We're going on tour. We're going on tour. Expect to see my booty and her boobies for sure.
Wait, can I talk to you for a second?
Yeah.
I just need to know, are we doing that? Because I'm fine with it. Listen, times are tough. I'm fine with it. But are we doing that?
Well, I don't know what your life is like, but I'm pretty sure you can see my nudes on my Instagram. So that ship has sailed.
We're getting naked. Hello, down bitches, old and new, far and near. Welcome to I Think Not, you all. We're going on tour. We're so excited. Joey, let's just tell them right off the bat. By the way, I'm Ellen. That's Joey. We recap stuff. We're happy you're here, but we're also going on tour.
That's right. We are coming to a city near you.
So, if you are in the following cities, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Raleigh,
Indianapolis, St. Louis, and Boston,
Seattle, L.A., Phoenix, or Chicago, you're going to want to head on over to our website or our Instagram or Patreon and take a look when we're coming on tour. That would be in August.
So here's the thing. Starting mid-July, for the next like year and a half, Ellen and I are pretty booked. We are booked and blessed, which means that next year we might not be able to go on tour. So if you can, if you have the time, if you have the babysitter, if you have the funds, come and see us out on tour. I promise you, we will give you a night of laughter, maybe some laughter through tears, and also butt stuff. Is that weird?
It's gonna be a regretful evening for all involved, including us, mostly Harris. You all, we are looking to add a couple more cities, but we have some professional and personal obligations coming up in life, and we have sandwiched this tour in the middle of a lot of life stuff, and it's only because we fucking love going on tour. We love being on stage. More than anything, we love seeing you. You are the reason why we're here. You are our friends, our supporters, our down bitches for life, and this is part of what we love. But this was what we could swing for right now, and like Joey said, we just might not be able to go on tour for the foreseeable future. It's all good stuff, but if you can make it happen, please come out and see us.
And also, we stay after every show and we take pictures and hug anyone who wants to get a hug by orangutan arms.
And you can press your body up against my Grand Tetons, no extra charge. There's VIP, there's general admission. You can find all the information on our website. Go to www.ithinknotpod.com. The link will be available for Patreon pre-sale. Last year we sold out St. Louis, Raleigh, and one other city I'm forgetting in the pre-sale, which makes us feel so good. But we really do want to see your face. And it is a crazy, hectic schedule. No doubt Harris is going to quit afterwards, but we would love to see you.
I love that you felt the need to say WWW. What are you, Meg Ryan, and you've got mail? What is this, 1996?
And everyone, listen, we know the world is a crazy place right now. There's finances and kids and jobs to be a juggling. If we could go to your town and perform in your fucking church hall or your gazebo, you know that we would. This is what we can do this year. We sure hope we see your smiling faces. But if you don't, we're going to give you a virtual hug from right here.
Yeah, we are. I'm very excited.
I am so excited, Joey. We've got to write a show.
Yeah.
But you all are here for an episode. We are I Think Not, the podcast that recaps your favorite true crime TV shows. And right now we are smack dab in the middle of Married to Evil. If you want to find it, you can find it on Discovery Plus and Hulu. But right now we are on Season 2, Episode 4, What Lies Beneath.
You seem very happy, very connected.
Chris had a crush on her in high school.
She was my stepmom. I considered her like my best friend.
When Chris and Heidi are in the process of moving, Chris started drinking again. It was pretty out of control.
His mind was gone.
He hit me across the head twice, man. He lit me up.
Because of the alcohol, he'd been acting strange.
I lost my father, but I also lost my stepmom.
The search took us to this concrete tomb. The concrete was probably a foot deep. You wouldn't have known there was a body there.
All right. Well,
so at the start of this movie, Harrison Ford and Michelle Pfeiffer are married, you see. And
do you know that that is the first thing that I wrote?
I just made that up.
Literally.
I was upstairs eating a lovely summer bean salad, and I was like, what movie is that?
Summer beans? Some over here, some over there.
Where is Michelle Pfeiffer, by the way? Is she good? Is she alive?
Oh, Michelle Pfeiffer looks better than ever. She looks incredible. She drank the juice.
Okay.
Now a warning.
Now a warning! How's Harrison Ford? He good? He alive?
Yeah, he's still making movies. He's not playing Obi-Wan Kenobi or whatever role he played, but, you know, he's good.
Oh, good for you, too. Good for you.
Now he's playing Oldie My God Oldie.
Okay, so I guess we're not covering the... I need to redo my notes.
Yeah, I know. But if you had done your research, you would know that the Michelle's Pfeiffer who... you would know
Michelle's
that the...
Michelle's Pfeiffer. Yeah. Michelle's Pfeiffer. Like Pfeiffer is her dog.
I see here on your resume that you were Michelle's Pfeiffer. Can you elaborate on that? The actress who plays Michelle Pfeiffer's best friend in this movie also played grown-up Christina in Mommy Dearest. And that, I've truly outgayed myself. Anyway.
Wow, okay. You all are dumber for having listened to this podcast. You are welcome. Be sure and turn your friends on to us. I think not, Pod.
I am warning you now, my ADHD is out of control today. So
I can't wait.
We are in Paulding County, Ohio, which as of 2020 had a population of a little over 18,000 people. And a talking head says, everybody knows everybody, which sucks if you ever want to host a swingers party like Ellen does in New Jersey. I don't know if y'all know this, but she is known for her heavily curated orgies. She serves complimentary pizza rolls and corn-flavored condoms. Very interesting flavor combos.
Just look for the pineapple wreath on the door and don't say anything. Well, they tell us, of course, it's a small town. Where what, Joey?
Everybody knows your name.
Play it, Rick. Sometimes you wanna go where everybody knows your name. All right, sorry, we have to do it. You all know it's Joey's worst nightmare. That would be your haunted house.
Oh my God, are you kidding me? Well, listen, if I lived in a small town, it would be more like this. Where everybody knows you're gay.
You would be the one.
Yeah.
You would be the town gay. They'd be like, we know a gay person. I'll walk you to his house.
Lovely garden. Beautiful garden.
A man by the name of Jeff is here, and he tells us it's a carefree place where you don't have to worry about things. I would worry about things anywhere, small town or not. I mean, I guess in a small town, I would worry about how to get out. Who doesn't worry about things?
I'm worrying about things right now.
Who doesn't? I want to meet the person that's like, you know what I just don't do a lot of? Worry. I want to meet you. Are you out there? DM me and be like, I have no worries. Who are you?
You know who doesn't have a care in the world?
Who?
My dad.
He's dead. My dad too. You got three kids somewhere. You know what? I don't care. I don't worry. I don't care. Where is that guy?
We'll never know.
Joey, guess what?
What?
Remy is back. You remember we talked about Remy a couple weeks ago, the custom fit night guard? Now, teeth are really important. I don't know. I just feel like when people are really confident with their smile and how their teeth look, your skin and your teeth, it's what people kind of see first, don't you think?
I agree. And we all want to feel confident about our smile, right? And the best way to protect your teeth is with Remy's night guard. It's 80% less than going to the dentist, and it's way easier to get. So we got our impression kits right to our door. Remy gives you step-by-step instructions which will help to get you your perfect impression, because let me tell you something, night guards should not be a one-size-fits-all.
And I have to speak to Remy's customer service, because I did my night guard and you email them the picture before you send it in, and within an hour someone emailed back and was like, girl, you didn't get your back molar right, do it again. And it's really easy and kind of fun, and then you send it off and they send you the night guard. I have been a teeth grinder since I was a little girl. So I've had night guards on and off for years, but I never liked how they felt. But with Remy, it is so custom made to your mouth and your teeth and every shape and bump and nook and cranny, you don't even feel it.
The best part is Remy is so confident you'll get a perfect fit that they'll offer you a 45-night perfect fit guarantee or your money back.
So no waiting rooms, no overpriced bills, just a better way to protect your teeth while you sleep.
Try Remy risk-free at shopremy.com/think and use code THINK to get up to 50% off your night guard at checkout.
That's 50% off at shopremy.com/think with code THINK.
Thank you, Remy, for sponsoring this episode and keeping our mouths intact at night. We gotta use them.
We got a lot to do with our mouths. Wait, what?
Heidi was very well known in the local area because of her family and their wedding or catering business, especially with small towns. I feel like everybody knew Heidi Grant, and or the Grant family name, at least.
All I can say is, God bless anyone who has to work with brides.
Well, okay. Brides, yes. I told you, my hair and makeup people called me Bride Chilla. I was not a crazy bride. But, I mean, anybody throwing a party. Catering must be such a hard job. I was just at Tommy Bracco's wedding. There were 345 people. Could you imagine being the guy in charge of making, like, 300 prime ribs and trying to get all of the mashed potatoes fluffy? I would die. I would die dead. And then everyone's little specialties, and someone comes back and they're like, table 42 says their raviolis are too al dente.
Yeah.
And the food is never good. How do you sear 126 halibut?
Let me tell you.
Someone explain it to me.
You've never been to a wedding in New Orleans. The food is always good.
I mean, it just can't possibly be that good for that. How many ovens you got back there? How many ovens do catering? I have so many questions.
Listen, the bride and groom are having their first dance. Everyone's crying and Ellen's going, can I talk to the manager? I got some questions.
This chicken, very dry. How was it cooked? Was it sous vide? I can tell this was not sous vide. It just seems like a very, very stressful job. Have you ever done makeup for a bride?
I sure have. And the time that I swore I would never do it again was when I had a bride whose makeup I had to basically redo 3 times because she kept crying over the fact that she thought her sister looked prettier than her. And she was like, she's going to upstage me at my own wedding. And I was like, I'm never doing this again.
Oh my, I was upstaged at my own wedding.
By your mother-in-law. Anyway, yeah. Okay, let's pull our ADHD together here.
Sorry, all, it's about to get dark. Don't you worry. Don't you true crime girlies worry. It's going to get dark.
With Heidi, it took pride in planning weddings and making sure everybody's special day was just right for them. It was her family business, so it was more than a job to her.
Heidi did more than catering. She would help plan weddings from decor, you know, manage the venue. She did it all, and she loved it.
That takes a really organized person. Listen, Heidi did everything soup to nuts.
Yeah.
If I were to take care of things, it would be like soup to, oh my God, something shiny. What is that?
Wow.
Oh my God, look at your sparkle pants.
Yeah.
You look adorable. I would be horrible at that job.
Honey, there's a reason we have 45 unanswered emails from Harris. Also, soup to nuts. Maybe I should change my Grindr username to that.
I make you soup, then I tickle you nuts. Whatever.
I have been a terrible influence on you. Heidi, we learned, was divorced. She did have a son and daughter from that marriage, but they lived with their dad. And in 2008, Heidi reunited with a man named Chris Franklin, whom she had gone to high school with. And it turns out Chris had a crush on her in high school. I had a crush on Jennifer Love Hewitt in high school, but that most likely would not have worked out. But they reconnected in the way that many former classmates do, on the Book of Face.
Oh, ye old Facebook. First of all, I love our Facebook group. It is pretty much the only reason I still have Facebook.
Same.
Because, listen, I love all of our DBs, young and old, but let me tell you who is fucking reckless on Facebook.
Who?
Boomers.
Oh, yeah.
They should have all of their electronics shut off at 8 p.m. Marjorie, you do not get Facebook. Absolutely not.
It's a lot of gloom and doom.
I talked about that Facebook post where my library was handing out condoms and all of the boomers right in my town got upset. And I said something to the effect of, congratulations, I support this. I hope you guys aren't getting any flack. And Sherry Ann wrote, brain rot is a thing, and you're a shining example. Y-O-U-R. And I just wrote, "You're Sherry," spelled correctly. Ooh, that got her good. Anyway, they met on Facebook. Now, Chris was also divorced, and he had a daughter, Olivia. And Olivia is here, and she explains that while she came to really love Heidi, you know, admittedly, it's always hard to see your parents with someone else, but she did say they were really happy together. A lot of people listening right now have bonus parents. I had a bonus dad and a bonus mom, and it is. It's weird to see your parents be with someone else. But, you know, she came around and was like, this is actually better. And she came to love Heidi. She actually called Heidi her best friend.
Yeah, Heidi really showed up for her. She attended all of her softball games. You know, things were really good because we all know those things can go awry very quickly.
Absolutely. It's so hard.
Now, Chris's first marriage ended because he struggled with alcohol use disorder.
Chris went to AA meetings 2-3 times a week, and Heidi was very supportive of, you know, him getting help and staying sober. It was definitely a struggle for Chris.
And like anything of that nature, those journeys aren't always linear, right? Because, you know, whatever someone might be addicted to, the path of recovery is some steps forward, some steps to the right and left. There might be some trips, there might be some stumbles. But the important thing to do is to get up and try again with no shame. And Chris was really open about his struggles. And it appeared that Heidi was totally there every step of the way, which is the only thing you can do from anybody struggling from any kind of addiction, whether it be alcohol, drugs, gambling, sex, porn. There's, you know, the list goes on. And so he wanted it for his life and she wanted it for him. But like anything, nothing is cut and dry.
Listen, we always say this. Addiction is a disease. It's a lifelong struggle. And anyone who is listening and working hard toward their sobriety or, you know, sustaining it, we love you. You got this. We're sending lots of good vibes to you.
And it's fucking hard.
Yeah.
And there's no shame. And it's a lifelong journey.
Yeah.
That's why people who, you know, haven't had a drop of anything or drugs, they still say, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm 30 years sober. Whether it's one day or 10,000 days.
Yeah.
But a lot of this story revolves around that.
Yeah. Now, Chris really was in love with Heidi, and he knew what he wanted. He told his friends, y'all, I listened to Beyonce when she said, and he said, okay, let me do it, because I like it.
So November 21st, 2021, they tied the knot. They got married at a local place. But you know what Heidi did not have?
Waterfall flowers?
She didn't have waterfall flowers.
My
she
God.
Had regular flowers. I didn't know you could have a wedding without waterfall flowers. Heidi did. Good for her. I say good for her. Be your own person. Go crazy. Do whatever you want. Maybe she wanted a waterfall hairdo. She didn't have that either. But
listen, all I'm saying is I can do without the waterfall flowers, but you got to have a nice big lacy sleeve, a puff sleeve. You know what I mean? Reminiscent
of
86.
Sleeve.
You know?
Absolutely not. And if you don't have any of those, red leather in the limousine. Well, y'all, this is 2021. Smack dab in the middle of COVID. No big party, no cake, no reception, no wedding. Could you imagine? There were a lot of things that happened during COVID. I went to a Zoom funeral.
Yeah.
There were bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, wedding parties, which actually I think is kind of awesome.
Honey, listen, if you can avoid a receiving line, you'll save yourself 2 hours.
We would love to have you over, but let's just hang out on Zoom and you send me a Bed Bath & Beyond gift card anyway.
R.I.P. Bed Bath & Beyond.
I know. I don't know where that came from. So the wedding was small but lovely. It was just Heidi, Chris, Chris's daughter, Olivia, and Heidi's dad.
Yeah.
That was it.
Very intimate.
Shortly after Chris and Heidi got married, they decided to move back to Antwerp, which was closer to the catering business.
They found a very cute house in the center of town. Now, here's the thing. Chris was on medication to help him with his sobriety. If he drank on this medication, it would make him extremely ill. And because of that, it actually helped.
Did you look that up?
No.
I looked it up. It's called, I'm going to mispronounce this, disulfiram? Disulfiram tablets?
Never heard of it.
It's pretty intense. You get really sick. You get the poopy squirts, you get nausea,
sure.
Vomiting. Yeah, but you know what? It worked for Chris. He was happy and he felt like he was in a really good place. So much so that he felt like he could go on his own and go off the medication. He felt like he had a really good handle on his drinking. Joey, guess who's back?
Who?
ZBiotics. the pre-alcohol probiotic.
Let me tell you, on a night out, my first drink of the night is a Z-Biotic. I'm 45. I'm not bouncing back the next day like I used to, and I'm faced with a choice. I can either have a great night or a great next day. That is, until I found pre-alcohol.
I will tell you, I have my whole neighborhood hooked on Z-Biotics. When I got my first order, I handed them out and everybody loved it. It is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic, and don't worry, it was invented by PhD scientists. And they figured out when you drink, the alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct, and that just hangs out in your gut. So the pre-alcohol, it produces an enzyme to break all that down. Joey, it's science, okay?
All you have to do is remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. I definitely notice a difference the next day, even after a night out when I'm raving in downtown LA. I can confidently plan on recording the next day without worrying that I'm going to sound like...
You all have to try Z-Biotics, and it's a perfect time because spring is here, which means opportunities to celebrate the warmer weather, maybe before drinks on the patio, that tropical vacation, or your best friend's wedding. So don't forget your Z-Biotics pre-alcohol.
You're getting married? Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great the next day.
Go to zbiotics.com/think to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code THINK at checkout.
Zbiotics is back with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked.
Remember to head to zbiotics.com/think and use code THINK at checkout for 15% off. And then swing by one of those raves that Joey goes to and report back to me.
It's very calming. So after Chris stopped taking his medication, they're mid-move, right? And Chris became very anxious. He was struggling a bit. And then, sadly, he began drinking again. And in August of 2021, Chris lost his mother, and he had a very hard time coping with that. Alcohol was his way of dealing with his pain. And that's not uncommon.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sometimes it's so overwhelming. I understand.
Now, two talking heads, one that I mentioned at the beginning, are Lizzie and Jeff. Jeff is Chris's brother and Lizzie is Jeff's wife. So ostensibly Heidi's sister and brother-in-law. And the family knew about his drinking. And they recognized that he was now very quickly kind of spiraling out of control. We fast forward to January 12th of 2022 and their mid-move, which already so freaking stressful. It's like one of the most stressful things you can do is move, especially when you're moving house. And Heidi asks brother-in-law Jeff to help them a little bit because they've done most of the boxes and papers and filing and stuff. Now they just need to move the really heavy stuff.
So Heidi says to Jeff, listen, Chris has been drinking and drinking quite a bit, and I just don't want him driving. So Jeff's was like, I can't leave work right now, but my dad and older brother Dave could come help, which they did. So dad hitched his trailer to their vehicle, headed over to the house.
Just as they were leaving the house, Chris showed up. He was annoyed that my dad and my brother Dave was there to finish helping them move. They started arguing in the driveway.
Older brother Dave recognized that Chris was just being a little more hostile than usual. He was being really defensive. What are you guys doing here? Why are you guys moving my stuff? And then Dave grabbed a hold of Chris and he did what the sensei told Johnny to do in Karate Kid. Do you remember what he told him to do? I'll help you.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that?
No, sensei.
No mercy.
Sweep the leg, Joey.
Yes.
No mercy.
Got it. Yes.
No mercy. Cobra Kai. God, the things I would have done to Ralph Macchio.
Wow.
Does that movie hold up?
I have no idea. But Ralph Macchio was also 45 when he made that movie.
Oh, lay off my boyfriend.
So, yeah, Dave got him on the ground and said, look, I'm going to let you up and then we will leave. And so they do. They leave. And the family hears about this and they're like, What is going on with Chris? They're really worried about him.
Mm-hmm.
And after the altercation, Heidi and Chris were also arguing quite a bit. And to avoid Chris in this state, Heidi went to sister-in-law Lizzie's house that night. And she told Lizzie, I will never let a man destroy me and my family name again. She was really driving that point home.
Right. More on that later. And the thing that Lizzie makes clear in the episode is she wasn't sad or scared. She was more angry.
Yeah.
She was like downright irate. So like in many small towns, Heidi knew that word travels fast. And her family had a name in this town. They were the catering business. You want that seared halibut for 78 people and your mushy peas? You're calling the Grant family. And Heidi was really protective about that. And she was very worried about her reputation. Rightfully so. Our reputations are all we have. Where would we be without the reputation as the loudmouth weirdos who sing way too many songs and cry a lot?
I don't know why you're looking at me when you say that. That's not my reputation.
Oh, sorry. Where would we be without the loudmouth, hysterical gay guy and that lady who cries a lot and they both sing show tunes? Where would we be? It's really hard to fit that on a marquee, let me tell you that.
Honey, I know it's been a while since you hosted an orgy and you've gotten very grumpy. Maybe it's time. Maybe like a 4th of July. Waterfall flowers. Anyway, so Heidi really wanted to avoid any situations where the police might be called because she knew that if one person saw that, the whole town would know. Mm-hmm. Well, the next day, January 13th, 2022, Chris actually called the cops and we hear the call.
Get the f*** out.
Hello?
Hello? Hey, man, my wife just tried to kill me.
How'd she do that?
Hit me with a fucking... I'm laying on my chair. She fucking hit me across the head twice, man. It lit me up.
What'd she hit you with?
Table leg.
So Chief Officer George Clemens from the Antwerp Police Department is here to give us some information. Now, first off, this man is so extra. He came to a documentary interview. Antwerp has a population of 1,700 people. It's like 1691, the town.
Okay.
This man showed up to his interview with a bulletproof vest. This man was like, listen, I don't know you. I'm sitting here. Not only that, he has his body cam on his chest. George was like, bitch, if you're videotaping me, I'm videotaping you. I don't know what's going to happen, but it will be caught in 4K on this body camera footage. It is called receipts. I'm a little bit extra, but I'm not fucking around. He is not taking any chances with Brian on camera too, for fuck's sake. That's for goddamn sure.
No, he showed up to this interview out of breath. He's like, sorry, I just came from a call. There was two grannies scrapping over some Werther's outside of a Walgreens. You just never know who's packing these days.
He's in a bulletproof vest. Babe, when was the last time there was active gunfire in Antwerp, Ohio? Well, let's get to that, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, just really, really extra. I gotta sit down to this interview. Marge, bring me my bulletproof vest. Never can be too careful in these parts. They're like, sir, we're with Discovery. They're like, yeah, shifty motherfuckers.
So Officer George responds to the 911 call. And when he arrives to the home, Heidi looks shocked to see him. And she says, look, Chris has been up all night drinking and now he's passed out. But also, there was no altercation. And I'm guessing he made that call while extremely intoxicated. And so Officer George says, you know, should I come inside and speak with Chris? And Heidi says, look, please, please don't wake him up, because if you do, he's going to be extremely upset and then I will have to deal with the repercussions. And again, this is a small town. So Officer George, he knew about Chris's struggles. This was not their first run-in with Chris. And so he believed what Heidi said. He's passed out and he just wanted to respect that. And Heidi also says, look, if there's any more problems, I will call you. So he says, okay, no problem. And he leaves.
So about 24 hours after that 911 call, daughter Olivia has an out-of-town softball tournament.
When I came to the house, my dad wasn't there. Heidi told me that he was at work. I packed my bag real quick and then she took me to Indiana. And I was gonna come home Sunday night.
So the weekend passes. daughter Olivia comes home. Heidi, you know, drove and picked her up again. Again, Heidi was very much part of her life. She took on a lot of the mothering responsibilities. And they get home, and Olivia notices that Chris's truck isn't in front of the house. So she's like, okay, whatever. They go inside. They have a chill night. They're watching TV, probably reruns of Sex and the City, available on TBS with commercials, whatever. And Olivia noted that Heidi kept going, I wonder where your dad is. I wonder where your dad is. But not in any kind of real panicky way, just like, where is that guy?
Well, the next morning, Heidi says to Olivia, you know what? I heard your dad's cell phone buzzing. Someone was trying to call him, and I found his phone underneath his bed. And both Olivia and Heidi were like, that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sister-in-law Lizzie says, when Chris would drink, he would often take off in his truck, which really made everyone worry for obvious reasons.
So then daughter Olivia is sort of asking more questions like, hey, have you seen my dad around? And I'm like, girl, don't take my joke. Okay, I get it. Pump the brakes. And then Heidi tells daughter Olivia, you know what? I've called the hospitals. I called the police stations. I've called the prisons. I've called the bars. I've been driving around town looking for him. I don't know what to do. Now it's Tuesday. Olivia wakes up. Papa Chris still isn't home. And so then Heidi's like, all right, do you want to drive around with me? Four eyes is better than two, I guess. So they do. They go and they drive around. They're just casing the streets of Antwerp looking for Chris.
And finally, Olivia asks Heidi, have you filed a missing persons report? And Heidi said, well, unfortunately, the police can't really do anything because he's an adult and he's allowed to take off if he wants to. Well, fast forward a week later, there's still no sign of Chris.
So now it's time for Olivia to go back to her bio mom's house. They did 1 week on, 1 week off.
That Thursday when I went back to my mom's house, I was more nervous that something bad happened to him. Something definitely didn't feel right. I was definitely really worried.
And she tells her mom, hey, my dad hasn't been seen for a week. And we don't know the extent of their relationship, but of course, that is still your daughter's father. Of course, she's going to be worried. So she calls her ex-brother-in-law, Dave. So Dave is Chris's older brother and says, hey, have you seen my ex-husband? Olivia just got here and said that she hasn't seen her dad in a week. Olivia takes a moment and she recognizes that her dad is battling substance use disorder, alcohol use disorder, and this is still a young girl's dad. Yeah. And she has really fond memories of him. He encouraged her softball, always playing catch. And so she was just talking about all the things that she loved about her dad. He was sick. He had a disease.
Yeah.
And that didn't make him a bad person. And I think that's really the point that daughter Olivia was trying to get across.
Yeah. According to sister-in-law Lizzie, Heidi had been telling folks that Chris was dealing with suicidal ideation. He had been messaging people on Facebook, including a song about suicide, right? So keep that in mind, because 8 days after Chris disappeared, Heidi found Chris's truck. She found it in the back of her family's catering business and mentioned that the driver's side door was wide open, his keys and wallet were in there, and then she had found footprints that led to a nearby river. So now everyone is wondering, oh God, did Chris take his life?
Joey, I have a song. Do you want to hear it? Okay, good. Humidity's rising.
Yeah, yeah.
Barometer's getting low. Ooh. That's right, everyone. The temperatures are going up, and I realize that summer is right around the corner, and I need a new rotation of clothes.
Baby, it is 90 degrees in LA today, and I went to go for a walk. I was looking through my clothes, and I'm like, great, same tank, same shorts, same everything. So I'm giving myself an upgrade with Quince, because their pieces are so easy. Also, they're elevated and stylish.
Well, because we all want to elevate our clothes. We don't want fast fashion. And so getting really good signature pieces like 100% European linen or leather or luxe swimwear, those are the things you want to build your wardrobe with. And Quince is priced at 50 to 80%. 80% less than what you would find in similar brands. They work directly with top artisans. Quince is going to cut out the middleman, so you're not going to get the markup, but you're going to get the luxury.
Also, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. That means a lot to us. And I'm telling you, if you are sleeping on Quince's outer sportswear, you are missing out. I wear all of Quince to the gym. I'm a walking ad at the gym for Quince.
And I promise you, every time I go on their website, they have something new. Sunglasses, they got it. Bags, luggage, swimwear, accessories. Quince is like, Ellen, we see you there. Thanks, Quince. So treat your closet to a little summer glow up with Quince.
Go to quince.com/think for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/think to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quince.com/think. Seriously, Quince, what are we? Are we dating?
So not only was the door wide open, Heidi actually found Chris's truck outside of her catering business. And the door to the catering business was wide open. And I was like, surely it hasn't been open for a week. Right? So Brother Dave gets word of all this information and he goes down to the river to see if he can see any signs of not only Chris, but potentially a suicide. And the next day, we hear another call to the police.
Holding, County Sheriff's Office.
Hello, my name is Dave Franklin. I'm from Payne, Ohio. I need to make a silver alert. Apparently my brother has been gone since Sunday.
Okay, what's your brother's name?
Chris Franklin. His wife's name's Heidi Graham.
Okay. Why hasn't she called?
I couldn't tell you.
Well, Officer George Clemens hears about this. Officer George was the one who first responded to that 911 phone call. And he tells us that when he's not at the police station, he also works as a wrestling coach. What they didn't tell you, I did a little side goog, is that he also moonlights as a bartender at the Bennigan's before that went out of business. And then it turned into a TGI Friday's Great Mozzarella Sticks. He also helps to exercise bow-legged chihuahuas on the weekends. He's a very busy man. Lots and lots of things to do.
Oh, so you didn't see that other article?
What?
Where he teaches Braille to the blind nuns every other Sunday.
Oh, right.
He goes to the Abbey. What's it called? Where the nuns live?
Yeah, the Abbey.
I've even heard her singing. And he teaches Braille as well as arts and crafts to the blind nuns. He is a well-rounded man.
Listen, you haven't lived until you've seen a blind nun read Playgirl in Braille. Anyway.
She's reading, ain't she? Name the movie.
League of Their Own.
Oh.
May, what are you giving it a read? Wow, our ADHD is terrible today. So anyway, Officer George immediately asks, who made this report? And they say, oh, it was Chris's older brother, Dave Franklin, not Heidi. And then he learned more about how Heidi found Chris's truck at her catering company, as well as the cell phone underneath the bed. All of this to say, he was like, my spidey senses are going off. Something's up.
And Officer George was like, bring me Heidi. So now we kind of smash cut to this interview of Heidi.
Okay, what's your husband's name?
Chris.
C-H-R-I-S Franklin.
My wife, Captain Clemens, is always usually right there with me, assisting me. So when I interviewed Heidi, she was in the room with me.
How long have you been married?
Since November 27th. 2 months.
2 months, okay. When did you last see him, talk to him?
It was Sunday. I left at about 10.
16.
Now we meet the chief's wife, who's the captain. It's a family affair over there at the Antwerp PD, Victoria Clemens. And she and George, they had to have texted in the morning because she, too, is wearing a bulletproof vest. George is like, listen, I know those freaky freaks are coming with their cameras today.
Yep.
You better wear your bulletproof vest, Vicky. And she's like, oh, come on, George. Is everything okay in Antwerp? What are you all scared of? Why are you doing this? This is just a little true crime show.
Well, let me tell you something. After you hear how this case ends, I think it makes sense as to why everyone on this episode is wearing a bulletproof vest. Yeah, also, I love that she's Captain Victoria. It sounds like a superhero name.
It totally does. I also love how the chief is married to the captain. It's just the two of them. Incidentally, do you know that on Thursdays, she teaches the elderly pogo sticking.
Wow.
Yeah, she offers a class. It's pogo sticking to the oldies is what it's called.
They must have amazing insurance.
She also, at night, she teaches a cooking class. She teaches a Vietnamese cooking to the Italian congregation over at St. Teresa's.
What? Look at God. You know, God's always on the move, and you just never know where. Keep up, everyone. But really, truly, this is a testament to how small this town is, because Captain Victoria says, I've known Heidi for a while because I used to babysit her kids. Everyone here has 45 jobs. So Heidi mentions that, yes, the last time she saw Chris was that Sunday morning. She had gone to pick up stepdaughter Olivia from her softball tournament.
I had asked him to come with me so I could, like, make sure he stayed sober. And he's like, I don't feel like going there. And he's like, I'm going to try to go over to Oakwood and get more stuff. And I looked at him and I said, if you pick that bottle back up, don't come back until you're sober. And that was the last thing I said to him.
She continues to tell the police how she drove around, and I went with my stepdaughter. She told the whole story. Now, through this interview, we see a lot of footage of this interview, yeah. You all. She is a mess. She looks disheveled. I don't know if her hair is wet or she's sweating. She looks stressed. She's crying. Honestly, she is a bit manic, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
She goes from crying to flailing, and she says she thought it was so weird that she found Chris's truck at her job. And Officer George continues the interview. He's trying to piece together a timeline. And then Officer George says in his confessional, about midway through, she was obviously emotional, but then she started to get very agitated. And she found a lot of the questions really hard to answer. And like Judge Judy says, if you're telling the truth, you don't have to remember anything. Fibber! You're a fibber!
Baloney!
But that's the truth. It's the same thing that I was saying in the Karen Reed trial. I've been watching the Karen Reed trial like I'm fucking getting paid to do it. If something happened for realsies, you don't have anything to really recall because you remember what happened.
Yeah, and if you ever find yourself on the stand, in court, in any kind of trial, whatever the subject may be, if at the end of your testimony you say, and that's for realsies... You're good.
You are good. I've done it so many times. Or I'll say, I don't recall.
Yeah.
I don't recall.
So at this point, they know there's more to the story, right? So Officer George says this.
I want you to really listen to me really good here. Okay? It's really important for you.
Mm-hmm.
You and I both know that you know where he's at. And I need you to tell me that. You and I both know that you took his truck out there.
I did earlier in the week when he was drinking to keep him from...
Listen. I'm telling you, I need to know what happened to me.
I don't know, George. I don't.
Yes, you do. Listen to me. I want to help you.
Know.
Listen. Yes, you do. No, yes, you do. Yes, you do. Now, listen to me. I need to know where he's at. You and I both know you know where he's at, Heidi. I just need you to tell me. You and I both know.
I'm not a bad person.
You're not a bad person. Please, just tell me where he's at. His family's going to want to know. Just tell
me. I know.
Tell me where he's at.
And so... Wife Captain Victoria says, in the back of my mind, I knew in that moment she had done something to Chris.
So he continues on this line of questioning and really pressing her hard for about half an hour. Tell me, Heidi, you know where he is. And he's just waiting for her to crack. And especially when she said, I'm not a bad person, that is really indicative of somebody who did something real, real bad. So they know there's more. They are super suspicious. Now remember, husband and wife, Georgie and Vicky, they're both in the interview and they're just waiting for Heidi to crack.
I will say, George did really well with this interview.
He really did. He used a lot of tactics, and that's something that I really love because you have to read people and see what they're going to respond to. Because what she actually responded to towards the end was him playing up the sympathy card.
Yeah.
I'm sure he did something awful. I'm sure he yelled at you, but you need to do the right thing. And that's the thing. You need to try. It's like being a parent. You're like, let me try being harsh. Let me try being cool. Let me try, I don't fucking know. Let's just play everything and see what comes out of it. Now, at this point, Heidi is sobbing.
Yeah.
And George knows he is right there.
Yeah. Especially when he's like, you know, we all make mistakes. You just have to tell me. Get it off your chest. I'm telling you, I don't know where this man studied coppery, but he is not just a small town girl living in a lonely world. He
Bennigan's.
Knows, yeah.
Bennigan's has a great after hours program for cops and also the broccoli cheddar bites.
God, I miss those potato skins. Did you have a Bennigan's in Oakland?
No, but I had a Bennigan's right like on my college campus.
Okay, y'all, this episode's going to get increasingly darker. Can we just have a sidebar so I can tell you a quick story real fast?
Yes.
When my father was still a minister and I was about 20, my dad brought me into his office at church and says, son, I need to talk to you because I heard a story about you at Bennigan's with some of the youth group. And I went, okay. And he goes, what you don't know is there was another youth group from a different church that overheard your conversation. Do you want to tell me what that conversation was? And I was like, I don't recall. And he said, well, let me remind you.
What did you hear?
Yeah. What do you think I thought I said? And he said, well, it's interesting because the youth group overheard you saying that gay sex was much better than straight sex because a man knows what feels good on a man. Care to elaborate? And I was like, at this time, no. I'll see you later. Bye, Dad!
And just like that, young Joey Taranto threw a bucket of water on himself and tried to melt into the ground.
Turns out it was just the ice bucket challenge. Very ahead of my time.
Wait, what ended up happening?
My dad was like, son, truly.
I agree. Now listen. Your dad does lack a little pink in the stink every once in a while.
My dad was like, son, you know better. You never know where you are, who's hearing you. And you have to remember that people know who you are as my son. And I was just like, I hate every minute of this.
Baby, it happened to Lola at a Broadway show.
Oh, yeah.
She was bad-mouthing the show, which she knows not to do. Somebody was like, that's Ellen Marsh's daughter, and texted me. And I was like, Lola, you can hate anything you want. There is a 5-block radius rule. You do not talk about a show until you are 5 blocks away, preferably nowhere in Midtown. And someone reported it back to me.
It's like a girl who was in Kinky Boots, and she was talking shit about the rehearsal schedule, and someone sitting across from her who wanted to be a Broadway performer went on message boards on BroadwayWorld.com and said, actor from Kinky Boots, imagine complaining about having a Broadway show. I would do anything to have that, and named her. So y'all, you just never know who's listening to you talk about the benefits of gay sex. Anyway.
You heard it here. Anyway, it's about to get real, real dark.
Yeah.
So that was your palate cleanser.
I just really kind of pressed her and pleaded with her essentially to just tell me the truth.
Heidi, listen to me. We all make mistakes. Trust me. I made mistakes in my life. We've all made mistakes, Heidi. Things happen in
his
life.
His daughter is...
But then finally, she started opening up. She reiterated to me that Christopher's mind was gone because of the alcohol. He'd been acting strange.
She says he didn't know who I was and eventually became violent. He was swinging a baseball bat at me. He was essentially trying to kill me. And now, as she's telling this, she's hysterical.
And to your point, Officer George is like, I know this is so hard. Keep going. He is ready for her to hang herself up on that clothesline to dry, but he's doing a great job. And the reason that he's pressing her is because, is Chris still alive? They don't know. So she says, on the morning of the 13th, Chris was trying to kill her. And she said that she needed protection because she was scared of him. She was scared for her life. So she reached out to a friend for a gun, for protection. So at this point, they know where this is going and it's getting darker by the minute, but they need this confession.
Yeah. So on the morning of January 13th, Heidi says she arrived at their home to find Chris in a very confused, very belligerent state. She says he grabbed a baseball bat and began swinging at her, and she was dodging, you know, just trying to dodge it. And at that point, she says she ran out the front door. That's when she went to her friend's house to get the gun. Now, this was the morning that Chris called the police and said Heidi had been beating him with a table leg, right? He had initially claimed that she was trying to kill him. But Heidi arrives back home with the gun and says, Chris didn't recognize me and again began assaulting me with a baseball bat.
She's fearful for her life. She went into her pocket to show him the gun, and she says, I just wanted to scare him. I just wanted to get him off my back. And then through her sobs, she says, I didn't know the safety was off. And she shot him, and he fell over.
We all know this. It is very hard for a gun to just go off on its own.
Right. Now, you have to understand that Captain Victoria is retelling this story. And Victoria, while sporting a lovely fall 2022 bulletproof vest, she has the same vocal affect as my grandmother would telling the story. Mm-hmm. And now my grandma, Maria, may she rest, amazing woman. She's been dead since 2016. Mm-hmm. So Victoria's up here. She's like, I have never heard a story like this. I never knew anything like this was possible. Things like this just don't happen in our town.
Yeah. I was like, are you Delilah at night?
Well, the rest of the story goes that after she shot him once, accidentally, I'm putting in bunny ears, she actually went and gave him another shot with the gun.
I didn't want him to suffer.
I understand. He was suffering, so you shot him again.
She said the final shot, she stood over him as he laid on the floor, and she shot him the final time.
How many times do you think you shot him?
I don't.
Okay.
And you all, they don't tell us till the end of the episode, and you will be shooketh.
Heidi said, I didn't want him to suffer. Okay, so you didn't think about calling 911 to get an ambulance over there? I don't understand.
And even though Captain Victoria speaks with no emotion, she makes a really good point. She says, okay, well, if you were scared for your life and you were scared of him and you shot him and he fell backwards, he's no longer a threat. So now you're actually just shooting to kill him.
So this all happened the morning that Officer George came to the house after Chris made that 911 call to report Heidi being the one swinging at him with the table leg. And Heidi admitted that at that point, when Officer George arrived, Chris was already dead.
Like, behind the door. Because Chief George is like, hold on. When you came to the door, you were positive Polly, ready to pour me a glass of sweet tea. You had no emotion. You definitely weren't acting like a woman who just shot and killed her husband in the home. Right behind the door was Chris, deceased. He was right there minutes later.
It's crazy because I also remembered Officer George saying, the first thing I noticed when Heidi answered the door was shock. She was shocked to see me. And then she was just fine. Mm-hmm. So that all tracks, right?
Yeah. So then Heidi's confession continues and says she wrapped his body in plastic, took him down to the basement, and buried him under cement. When I heard that, Joey, I was like, wait, I missed a sentence. This story is crazy, but this woman is resourceful. Essentially, this fucking crazy broad took cinder blocks and sort of made like a coffin for him in the basement. And then George is all of us and was like, whoa, you just had cinder blocks and cement down there?
Was there already cement down in the basement? Or where did you get the cement?
I bought it.
Like in bags? Or where did you buy the cement at?
I paid cash for it at Menards.
I was like, girl, you are writing a how to do a murder playbook. Buying in cash. She gave them everything. She gave them the store name. She might as well have just given them the receipt and been like, there's the timestamp. Go find the surveillance footage. Also, Heidi's like, I've done mortar work before. I was like, bitch, this town really does have people with a lot of fucking jobs.
It is wild.
She knows how to mix and pour cement.
I don't even know how to spell cement. She then goes on to say she hid the gun in the basement, and she also rented a rug cleaner to clean the carpets of all of the blood. By the end of the interview, Officer George is thinking, this is not a self-defense case. This is the confession of a cold-blooded murderer. And in fact, by the end of that interview, Heidi was in fact charged with first-degree murder.
So now the family hears about everything that's transpired. They are devastated. Brother Jeff is sitting there speaking through this sweet, shaking voice, and he's just speaking to the cold nature of everything. But Heidi kept insisting that she did this out of self-defense. He was out of his mind. The only reason she killed him was because she was afraid that he was gonna kill her. But everything lined up, it doesn't really seem like self-defense, but the authorities definitely need to find out more. Not only are they really, really sure they don't have all of the information, but they want to make sure that this whole self-defense narrative is squashed. So they get a warrant for their home and they try and gather as much evidence as they can. And of course, they go down to the basement and sure enough, they show us the police photo of this man-made concrete. It's not even a casket. It's like a tomb, right? What would you call it?
So she basically entombed this man in a block of cement. What she did was take those cinder blocks. She took two, stacked them on top of each other, and just made like a rectangle shape. Then she placed his body in the middle of it, poured cement all over it, and then put wood. You would never know what it was. You wouldn't think that, oh, there is a body in there. It was extremely eerie to look at.
It's so creepy.
And also underneath the stairwell in the basement, they found the gun in a box on some shelves.
Yeah, just like a basement box next to some fucking Christmas lights and ant killer.
Yeah.
Just thrown in there.
Chief Clemens was able to get footage of Heidi as she made multiple visits to gather different things to clean up that scene.
You can leave everything there, but I will need you.
Okay.
Heidi appeared to be very jovial.
It's over time.
You would not have known that she had just killed her husband that day.
She is laughing. She's being sweet as pie to the woman ringing her up. She even was asking about the reviews on the rug cleaner that she was renting to get rid of the... It's crazy.
She's over here telling knock-knock jokes to Janet, the cashier, at the fucking Home Depot. She's, like, talking about the weather, and she's like, oh, I really need something that's good with tough stains. You know, mud, oil, blood. She didn't say that. I added that. But she was just acting like it was nothing. Asking the reviews for the rug cleaner that's going to clean the blood out of the rug from your husband who you just murdered. It is absolutely demented. Why would I be cleaning blood? That was silly. That was just a silly little joke. You should come to my pogo stick class.
I mean, you'd think that this woman had just watched Shrek 2 for the first time. She was happy and bubbly. It's a great movie. And after she crudely buried Chris, she was selling furniture on Facebook Marketplace. And the point being is, if she was so distressed, if she had had this traumatic experience of fighting for her life, having to murder her husband, and then, you know, burying him in their basement, why is she selling an armoire and all her comments acting like she doesn't have a care in the world? It's very odd behavior.
Yeah, everyone come over. I got this toaster oven. And if you're nice, I'll throw in my weed whacker.
It's just really fucking weird.
But it's weird because all of her actions were adding up to normalcy. Normal life, just going on like she didn't have a fucking cement tomb in her basement with her husband's body in it. It is absolutely psychotic. Now, something you gotta know about the Antwerp Police Department, they got the time.
Yep.
Trust and believe they had the time. Population 1,681. They are getting surveillance footage from everywhere. They got surveillance footage from her fucking quinceañera.
Yep.
They're like, how far do you want this to go back? They're just everything. They can basically map out her every move through some kind of surveillance footage that the police gathered.
Well, they then acquired surveillance footage from a business basically next door to Heidi's home that she shared with Chris.
When we were looking through the footage just days after the incident, there's a clip where this red truck is present. Footage was too grainy to show a clear plate number. You could tell by the footage, you know, he was a male, probably in his 40s or 50s, you know, wore glasses.
We see a man helping Heidi load a freezer into the bed of that truck, and then he drives off with it. Now, who is this guy? And what does he have to do with this crime? And even though they couldn't really make out the plate numbers clearly, they're able to identify this man as Neil Deemer.
Well, what does Neil know? Turns out he said they had been friends for a couple years. They had chatted on and off. Well, first and foremost, Neil thought Heidi was divorced. I was like, well, I know where this is going.
Yep.
And so, you know, she had asked him to help her with this freezer or whatever, and he threw that freezer away at his work. And he's like, I don't know anything about Chris Franklin. I don't know anything about his murder. So the authorities are like, okay, Neil, level with us. Are you guys more than friends? Of course they were. He was like, matter of fact, you know, the day we moved that freezer, we had just done the on all fours foxtrot on the living room floor. You all, smash cut to a picture of the living room floor. You all, don't fuck with me. I do not need the visual.
It's too much.
Those two going to Pound Town on that fucking Bob's Discount Furniture rug. No, thank you.
Yeah. And this all took place a week after Chris's murder. And that poor man is lying in a grave made of cement. So now, Officer George is convinced more than ever this is not the actions of someone who was acting in self-defense. And so they just keep investigating. They want to prove without a shadow of a doubt that this was murder. And police find out that there was a gas station attendant who may have seen Chris the morning of the murder. This gas station is called the Pit Stop, and it's less than a block away from Chris and Heidi's home.
And this worker is really clutch because she confirmed the morning that Chris was murdered, he had been there and he had purchased cigarettes. But something really suspicious happened because the worker explained that his shirt was all bloody. He had blood on his face and it looked like he had a black eye. Now, I actually looked at the court report for this. He had like a goose egg on his eye.
Wow.
They kind of like toned it down. His eye was practically swollen shut, the way this woman described it in the court report that I saw. So now they're like, holy shit, that whole story, everything is ass backwards. He had been assaulted by Heidi that morning. And so the self-defense theory is blown out of the water, all thanks to that gas station attendant who confirmed he was injured that morning.
Well, she also asked him if he needed help. And he said,
yeah.
No, thank you. I've already called the cops.
Based on the 911 records, we was able to determine that Chris must have went to the gas station minutes after making the 911 call. This eyewitness account was very crucial in determining the fact that he had been assaulted by Heidi, and without that witness, we wouldn't know whether or not that truly did happen.
And the police do feel like this was somewhat premeditated, that she was solely focused on her family's reputation. She had come home, attacked Chris, and when he called the cops, saying, my wife is trying to kill me, she left. She left to go get that gun. Chris then walked to the gas station, bought cigarettes, goes back home. Heidi returns, and this woman shot Chris 10 times.
You all, we don't hear about this till like the last 8 minutes. When I heard this story, I thought she shot him twice. Once when she was like, you know, claiming her self-defense, and once to actually kill him. 10 times? Not in the episode. I looked at the autopsy report. 6 bullets were recovered from inside this man's body.
Wow.
Self-defense?
No, that was rage.
Go fucking jump into the sun. That is awful. I couldn't believe they waited that long to tell us. 10 times?
I know, it's insane. I mean, but like I said, that is rage. That is hatred. And so then Heidi dragged his body, wrapped up in plastic, to the basement door. And Heidi had told the police in her initial interview that he was really heavy and hard to move. And from what they can tell, she just pushed this man's body down the stairs and then buried him in cement. And the motive? She did not want Chris to ruin her family's image, which would essentially ruin the business. So at that point, in her eyes, Chris was a liability and expendable.
Well, this nasty bitch was charged with aggravated first-degree murder on October 19th, 2022. But she's not going down without a fight. She stuck to her self-defense story, so much so, this bitch took the stand in her defense. You all, with the way things are going in the world and this fuck, I'm lighting my bingo card on fire at this point. I'm done. I ain't playing bingo with any of you all. Did she not take civics?
It was insane. You never hear about that. I'm like, this woman is crazier than a glass filled with titty sweat. What in the hell?
Your Fifth Amendment right, you all. It protects you against self-incrimination. You do not have to take the stand. You have the right to remain silent. You have the right to sit down and shut the fuck up. You can shut your whole fucking mouth up. I honestly wish a lot more people would shut up. I mean, I'm not going to. It's just something I've noticed.
Got it. You know, what I think is, it wouldn't surprise me if this woman had narcissistic tendencies and felt that by getting on the stand, she could endear the jury to her.
I'm going to cry. I'm going to tell this whole sob story. I'm going to say I was fearful for my life. Stupid. I mean, thank you, because you're in jail. But so sit down and enjoy your right to fucking silence.
There's a lot riding on her testimony. If they truly believed in their mind that she was a victim of this domestic situation, she could walk away. And then there would be no justice for Chris and his loved ones.
Only after 3 hours of deliberation, the jury found Heidi Grant guilty, and she received 15 years to life. She also got a mandatory 1 year for use of a firearm and an additional 30 months for tampering with evidence. Also, there was no evidence that the man she was sleeping with, Neil Deamer, was involved in that murder.
He was just a useful idiot, I'm sure. He was just trying to do the hibbity-dibbity or whatever.
Right.
And poor Olivia is here, and she says, I lost my dad and my stepmom. And again, you know, she said, I loved her.
Yeah.
She was my best friend. And brother Jeff just absolutely breaks my heart. These are his last words of the episode.
I miss Chris's laughter. He seemed to laugh a lot. He liked to make people joke, you know. I miss that time that we don't have now. He was a good brother, and I miss him.
That's the end of this episode. Jeff really got me at the end there.
Yeah.
So a couple things that went into play for the decision that weren't included in the episode. So remember that day they had that tussle in the driveway on that moving day?
Yes.
And Heidi went over to Liz and Jeff's house afterwards. Well, both Liz and Jeff testified that not only was Heidi so angry, she asked them, when is it okay to fucking kill somebody?
Jesus.
Yeah, it was really, really dark. Now, the man who provided Heidi with that gun was also interviewed. His name was Scott Wolf, but it turns out that guy didn't know anything either because he thought he was doing Heidi a favor. She told Scott Wolf that she needed a gun because she wanted to take a conceal and carry class. That guy had nothing to do with it either. He had no idea what that gun was being used for because obviously it was his weapon and they traced it back to him. And so I also want to talk to you about the timing of the morning that Chris called 911. Dispatch informed Chief George at 7:35 a.m. about the call, and he had gotten to the residence at about 8 or 8:05 a.m. So imagine, let's say, Chris called the cops at, let's call it 7:30. And then remember, he went to the gas station to get the cigarettes and then went home. All of this took place in like 25 minutes.
Wow.
So the time that she hit him, he went to the gas station, she went and get the gun, came back, killed him, and then Officer George was there with Chris's dead. That was all 25 minutes.
And that's probably why she answered the door like a deer caught in headlights, like why she was so shocked to see him there. She's like, oh, fuck, am I caught? Also, how did no one hear that gunshot?
Honestly, it was probably as he was pulling in. No joke, it had happened minutes before. Not to be morbid, the man might have still even been struggling with his life.
Wow.
I mean, who knows?
Wow.
It's just the timing is crazy. Well, Heidi appealed, of course, in August of 2023. I have a little piece of joy every time I read these bullshit appeals because they just pull at everything. It's actually hilarious. She said she was denied her right to effective counsel. She was denied her right of due process. And she also fought back because at the trial, the jury was not given the option of self-defense, or anything. The only other charge they offered was voluntary manslaughter. And she said that the fact that they didn't play into the self-defense, whatever, her appeal was denied. That bitch is incarcerated at the Ohio Reformatory for Women in Marysville, Ohio. Her parole hearing is scheduled for June 2040. Baby girl, it's a done deal. You're ugly on the inside, and it's going to kill you slowly from the inside.
I mean, all that time she was worried about her family business and their reputation, I'm pretty sure they're like, thanks for the help, Heidi. Thanks.
And you know, I gotta say, when this episode first started,
I thought it was gonna be Chris.
Oh no, a man who has fallen under the pressure of alcohol use disorder. And then as it came clear what was happening, I just felt so bad because, you know, one thing that people always say to us is they say, you know, thank you for recognizing that alcohol use disorder is a disease. Because I do think that there are people who have difficulty recognizing it as that because it doesn't look like or sound like most of the diseases we know.
Yeah.
Right? You know, heart disease, lung disease. But science and research, it changes. And the definition of what addiction is has changed. It's not a behavioral problem or someone who's making bad decisions or reckless decisions. It is a chronic brain disorder and it can happen to anyone. It actually rewires your brain. And this man needed help. He needed support. And instead, he got abuse. And, you know, everyone says he was a really jovial, happy man. And the people in my life who have suffered with alcohol use disorder, they're not bad people.
No, of
they're
course not.
Well, so, you know, I just sort of went in and I was like, oh, I know this story. No, I fucking didn't.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of had to check myself a little bit.
Yeah, she knew he was vulnerable. She knew.
Yeah.
It's a really sad ending, and my heart breaks for that family.
And, you know, alcohol use disorder remains hidden, and your body can resist treatment, and your brain can play tricks on you. So if you or someone you love is battling, struggling with any kind of substance use or addiction, please contact the Substance Use and Mental Health Services Administration. And that helpline is 1-800-662-4357. You can get information, support. You can get information on treatment facilities in your area. You are not alone, and you are worthy, and you are deserving of help and support and comfort. Please say something funny, my love.
Well, since everyone on this episode moonlights in some sort of way, has several jobs, I too have been inspired. I actually just put in an application at Disneyland.
Okay, for what?
Yeah, I'm going to dress up as Mickey. I'm going to get in one of those Mickey costumes where I will chase kids around Tomorrowland, chucking churros at them while I go, oh boy. I think I'm a shoo-in.
You are most certainly not going to get fired from that job.
Dreams can come true.
Down Bitches, come see us on tour. I promise you, you will never see a show like ours, whatever that means to you. Be sure to check out our website or any of our social medias. We would love to see your faces. And if you want a little bit more of us, we have a solution for you.
That's right. You can head on over to patreon.com/ithinknot, where for as little as $5 a month, you can get 4 bonus episodes. Also, we have tons of community events. We do monthly watch parties, quarterly paint parties. We also have merch boxes, which are going out, I think, the end of this month or beginning of June. Lots of blood, sweat, and tears go into the themes. They're so great. I pack them. I pack them and send them off.
There is something for everyone. At the very least, at $5, you get 4 bonus episodes. We sure work hard for those episodes, but the good news is we love it. Please follow us on social media. That's where you're going to find out anything that's going on in the world of I Think Not, including our tour. That's where we post all of our funny videos. And you can find us, I Think Not Pod, on pretty much all platforms. And our Facebook group is popping. Lots of support. There's all kinds of side groups. There's meetups and local towns. We love it. It's called the I Think Not Pod Discussion Facebook group.
In the words of Donald Trump,
Wrong.
It's the I Think Not podcast Facebook discussion group. It felt good. I always get that wrong. Can you just let me have this?
You can have it, baby. Listen, I think gay marriage is about to be taken away, so you can have this. I love you all. Please be good to yourselves. Until next time, I love you, Joey.
I love you too, Marie Morton. I love you, DB, so much.
I love you, dumb bitches. Bye.
That was goofy.
Did you watch the episode?
I did watch the episode. How did I miss that? I'm trying to think of a funny joke. Who,
We're recording on a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday.
No fucking murdering clowns this week, Rick, yeah. Much to your dismay.
Well,
that was fucking bananas.
Worse things than recording on a podcast on a Tuesday.